All right, this is the lecture video for lecture 8, and today we're going to be learning all about web development. So we've seen so far in this course, we've taken a look at a lot of different websites in the context of networking and their context of design and usability. And so now we're finally going to see how we can actually go about creating one of these websites of our own. So we can have our own little place on the web, and you'll explore this more in this week's problem set and in the course's final project. So first, a quick update on some administrative things. So the course's second exam is coming up soon, so not next week, but the week after that, as stated on the syllabus. And so this exam will cover the second half of the course. So your first exam covered weeks 1 through 4, and so the second exam will cover weeks 5 through 9. So it will not be cumulative, so you know, that's not to say you should forget what binary is, but you will not be explicitly asked questions about topics that are only covered in weeks 1 through 4. So that means that there will also be a review session. So not this week, but the week afterwards. There'll be a review session after lecture led by Ben and RJ to kind of recap everything we've looked at in the second half of the course. And that'll be held from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. In the same location. So before we talk about actually making a website, let's actually just recap what happens when you visit a URL. So as you recall, when you visit a URL, that's going to resolve to some kind of IP address. And that IP address just points to some machine that's connected to the internet. And the job of that machine is really just to serve you back some content. So you, as a client browsing the web, can actually see something when you go to a URL. So this machine is running some special software called a web server. And as its name suggests, the job of the web server is to serve you content. So remember that when we go to a URL, we're going to contact this web server, and based on what URL we typed in, the web server is going to do something. And that something could be finding a file on disk or maybe running some code in the background, but at the end of the day, the web server is going to have a response to your request. And so that means that after the web server has finished doing whatever it needs to do and has this textual response, it's going to send it back to your web browser. And so now, based on what the web server sent back, our web browser can actually display something that kind of creates the internet as we know it. So we've seen a few different ways of representing text and things on a computer. So for example, we saw ASCII, and as we saw, one of the limitations with ASCII is that, well, it doesn't really allow us to express much more than plain text. You know, and that was kind of boring because you want to express things like pink font and glitter and things like that. So one other way that we can actually express this is with something called HTML. This stands for Hypertext Markup Language. So HTML isn't so much a programming language as it is a markup language. And that HTML's job is to describe the structure of some content. So if you have a document that maybe has a heading and several paragraphs, you know, placed in different places, the job of HTML is to kind of describe how this document is organized. And so this translates into web pages that have, you know, different areas that look end up looking differently on your web browser. We'll see how to do that today. So we've seen this snippet of HTML a couple times, but now let's actually get into what this means and how we can actually start to write our own HTML. So the first thing we have here at the left is called an HTML tag. So notice that every tag is going to start with this left angle bracket and end with this right angle bracket. So what's in between those brackets is going to be the tag that you want to create. So we remember that this H1 tag created this big heading, kind of the level 1 heading. There was also H2, H3, and so on to create kind of subheadings and sub-subheadings and so on. So once you create this start tag, as by creating an open angle bracket, some name for your tag that HTML has specified, and we'll take a look at some other tags that we can put in here, and then this close angle bracket, everything that comes next is going to say, okay, this is now a level 1 heading. Once I've hit the level 1 heading start tag, every text that comes after that is going to be a heading until we hit this thing called the close tag. And notice how the start tag and the close tag look very similar. We have an open bracket here, followed by a slash, then the same tag that we already opened. So we opened up an H1, we typed in some text, and now that's going to be a heading. And so now we want to tell the browser, OK, this is no longer a heading. We're going to do something else now. And the way to say that is by saying, OK, we're going to have a slash followed by that H1 again, and then again, just another closing bracket. So you can see here, this kind of forms this little area. We have CSCIE1 enclosed between this start tag and this end tag. Now in HTML, this simply says, well, this is now a heading. So when we create an HTML document, we're essentially going to have a bunch of these tags, some of them nested in between each other or next to each other, to create this larger document. So the first thing that we need to tell our document is what it is. So much like we saw JPEG start with these magic number bytes, with HTML, it's recommended that we start off our HTML document with this thing called a doctype. And a doctype looks like this. So again, we just have this left angle bracket, then we have an exclamation mark kind of randomly, then the word doctype or document type. And then we're just saying, okay, whatever we type next, this is going to be HTML, just so that everyone's on the same page. And then again, we have this closing bracket here. So notice that there is no kind of slash doctype. This is kind of one of the only things you'll be writing in HTML that doesn't have a corresponding close tag to what looks like an opening tag. So this is just a one-time thing saying everything after this is going to be HTML, just so you know. So perhaps the most fundamental HTML tag is this one. This says everything inside of this is HTML. So this will probably be the first tag that you create in any HTML document. So anything that comes inside of this tag here is going to be HTML, which makes sense because that's what we're using to represent web pages on the web. So what are some things that go inside this? Well, the first of these is called the head tag. And the head tag is just some information about your page that won't actually be displayed by your web browser. And we'll see, you know, a number of things we can use here, but one of them is this thing called the title tag. And the title tag, you know, if you're using Chrome or Firefox, you know, any tabbed browser, that text that's displayed kind of at the top of your tab, that text is taken from the page's title tag. So if I had an HTML page with this tag, page title, when I opened it up in Google Chrome, the top of that tab would say the words page title. So kind of a boring title. But notice again, this is following the same structure. We have an opening title tag, we have some text, and we have a closing title tag. So after the head is going to be what's called the body of the HTML document. And the body is what's actually going to be displayed by your web browser. And so here is where we're going to put all of our headings and paragraph and images and cat videos and everything like that is inside of this body tag. So here is basically what a skeleton HTML document would look like. So we've just seen all of these parts. First, we have this doc type that's saying here comes some HTML. Then immediately after that, we have the HTML tag. And that's saying, okay, I'm starting off this block of HTML, and everything between this start tag and this end tag is going to be some HTML. So then we have two things here. First, we have our head, then some stuff in between, and then we're going to close off our head. So now, when we have our body tag, some stuff in between, and we close off this body, everything in between here is what's actually going to be displayed on our web page. So let's look at some tags that we might want to use inside of this body section. So we saw H1 is for heading. We also have this P tag. And as you might guess, this P is for paragraph. So you might want to use this tag just, you know, for some generic paragraph text. If you want to make something bold, we have the B tag, B for bold. As you might guess, if B is for bold, then I is for italics. And notice how we can still nest tags like this. So we saw before that we had an HTML tag, and inside of that was a body tag, and inside of that, you know, was some more stuff. So again, we can still nest things like bold and italic. But notice what I'm doing here. I open a bold and I open an italic. So everything after this is going to be both bold and italic. But notice the way I'm closing these tags. I close the italic first, and then I close the bold. So we see here we kind of have, you know, the last thing we opened is the first thing that we close. And so we'll want to try to keep this in mind, you know, as we're writing our HTML document. This will just make things much easier to read, and also, as we'll see later, make our HTML valid, and something that any web browser agrees is a good idea. So some other tags. So what if I wanted to create a bulleted list, for example? So to do that, I would use this tag here called the UL tag. So UL stands for unordered list. And this says, okay, everything inside of me is going to be a bulleted list. So here comes some bullets. And so to tell the web browser that here are the actual bullets in my list, I'm going to use this thing here, the li tag, or list item. So that means that I have here a bulleted list of three items, because I'm starting off an item here, I'm ending the item, I'm starting an item here and ending it, and so on. So notice how these li's are not inside of each other, because if they were, your web browser would be pretty confused. So I'm closing each li tag before I move on to the next one. And so now that's how I kind of get, you know, this three-item list, because this inside of this ul tag are just 1, 2, 3 li tags and nothing more. So if instead of a bulleted list, I wanted something like a numbered list where everything was numbered automatically, if I just change that u in unordered to an o for ordered, then I can do something like this, the same exact thing where I have three list items inside of an ordered list tag, and that's going to make me a nice ordered list. So if we want something a little more complex than an unordered list or ordered list, we can actually make some tables. And so this is nice. So a table, you know, might look something like you have on an Excel spreadsheet or a formal document. So if I have here a table tag that says, okay, here comes a table. The table's going to have rows and columns. So this TR is going to stand for table row. And of course, this TD stands for table cell. So inside of my row, I can have one or more cells. And my table itself can have one or more rows. And so we'll see an application of this just a bit later. So you see that all of these tags here, you know, when we created a table, we didn't really have to say anything about that table. We just said, okay, here's a table, and there's really nothing else you need to know other than here comes a table. So some tags aren't like that. So for example, when you click a link on any HTML page, you kind of have two different things you're dealing with. So the first of these is, where is this link going? And the other one is, what is the text that I'm allowed to click on? So you notice here that I have a link here, and the text that's going to be displayed, as you might guess, is just the word Google. So if I visit this in a web page, I will see on the web page the word Google, and when I click it, something is going to happen. So the way that I tell my web browser via HTML what to do when I click on this word Google is with this thing here called an attribute. And so an attribute is just some way of specifying via key value pairs, which we've seen in HTTP requests, for example, some extra information about this tag. So here we're saying, okay, this is the text I want you to display on the page, but here is where I actually want you to go when you click on it. And so we can have a number of other attributes, for example, like this image tag. So this img says, okay, somewhere on the page there's going to be an image, and I want to tell the web browser, well, what image should I display? It wouldn't really make sense to have an open image tag, some text, and a close image tag, because then the browser would want to display that text when we're trying to display an image. So what we can do is just specify via this key value pair called src the path to some image that I want to display. So that means that somewhere on my web server, that computer responding to my HTTP requests, there is a file called cat.jpg, and it's sitting somewhere on disk that's the same location as this HTML document. So notice here that at the end, we have this weird looking thing, this slash angle bracket. And so what this is this kind of like a shortcut that we have inside of HTML. So normally, when we looked at other tags, we did something like this. We had a start tag. We had a start tag here, maybe some attributes, some text, and a close tag. But you know, as we were just saying, it doesn't really make sense to have anything inside of an image tag, because we're not going to display text. So this is simply a shortcut for opening up an image tag and then immediately closing it without anything inside of it. So notice here that these attributes like src and href, so these aren't just, you know, random things that I get to choose. So this is something that the HTML specification tells me this is how, for example, to say where a link is pointing. So just as we looked at protocols like HTTP that had this standard set of rules that everyone should follow, even if, you know, they don't really agree with those rules, we have the same thing here with HTML. HTML just lays out a set of rules for you as the website developer and as the web browser, such that if the web browser sees an image tag with an attribute of src, then that's how the web browser knows that it should display an image located at that location. So this is just the standard set of rules that other smart people wrote, and we're just going to follow them in order to create our web pages. So let's take a look at an example of generating a super simple web page. So what I just did was I opened up a program on my Mac called Text Wrangler. And really, I'm just looking for any kind of plain text editor. So rather than opening Microsoft Word that will save a .doc file, I'm looking to just edit plain text. So you might use something like Notepad on Windows, or even better, Notepad++, or other programs like that. And these are just special programs that have been written to make it easier for you to write things like HTML. So I want to create a simple web page. So the first thing I want to do is create my doc type. So if I type in doc type HTML, that's going to tell everyone, OK, just so you know, this is going to be an HTML document. So now I might want to say, here comes my HTML. And notice here how I've indented a little bit. So for example, let me just type in this head. So notice how head is indented. And this is just kind of to illustrate the hierarchy that we're going to see with our HTML documents. So if I kind of left-aligned everything here, and suddenly, you know, inside of my head I had a title, and inside of my title I had something like this, it's going to start to get really unwieldy and unclear what the hierarchy of my page looks like. You know, it's no longer clear, you know, if title is a child of head, if it's inside of head or anything like that. Where if I have everything nicely indented, then it starts to be clear what elements are inside of what other elements. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to create a web page for a simple cat store. So for example, my title of my page is going to be Tommy's Cat Store, and I'm going to close my title tag now. We'll indent this again. And so now we're just going to close off my head tag, since there's no other information I'm going to give you about my web page right now. So after the head, we're going to open up the body tag. And we'll just close the body tag right away and close the HTML tag. So inside of this body, the first thing I want to put is just some heading at the top of the page that will display to you, you know, something like Tommy's Cat Store. So you'll notice that because this text here is inside of the HTML body, this is something that will actually be displayed on the page. Where up here, inside of this head tag, this will not actually be displayed on the page. So because I opened up an H1 tag here, then specified some text inside of it, that means that this text here will be treated as a large heading by the web browser. So okay, so I have a simple HTML document now, and I kind of want to see what this looks like when I open it up in a web browser. So if I come up here to File, and I'm just going to save this, and now if I come into my folder here, let's just make a new folder. We'll call it 1, since this is our first example. And now I want to save this file as, well, I'm going to call it index.html. So notice here that I'm not saving this file as .doc or .txt, but I'm saving it as .html. And this is, again, this is to let your web browser and your file or your computer know that this is an HTML document, so we should probably open it up in a web browser. So if I click on Save, so notice here that my little icon at the top changed to the little Google Chrome logo. So if I open up Finder, I come into Lecture 8, Folder 1, and I double click on this, then here we go. This is now the incredibly boring but soon to be exciting HTML that we just wrote. And so now, if I come up here to the top right, and I go to Tools, View Source, what this will do is this will actually view the HTML source of the web page. And so this should look pretty familiar, because this is exactly what we just typed into our text editor there. OK, so let's make this page a little bit more interesting by adding something else. So I want this store to have more than just one page, and so I kind of want some links to some other pages that I can create later. So let's create a list of links that I can click to get to other pages on my website. So to do that, let's use this UL tag, where this UL is going to stand for unordered list. So I'm going to get a bulleted list of stuff. And we'll close this tag just so we don't forget. And notice here how this UL and this H1 are kind of indented at the same level. And that's because this UL is not inside of the H1 tag. It's kind of alongside it. So it's at the same level in this hierarchy. So now inside of this, let's create a list item. And we'll open and we'll close that. And so now let's just open up an A tag for a link. We're going to use the href attribute to say where this link is going to go. So we'll worry about that later. And let's say that we want to link back to our home page. So this is our home page. So the value of this attribute is just going to be index.html. And so this is just a path to some file. You notice that I am already in the index.html file, and so clicking this is just going to bring me back to the same place. And so that's not very exciting, so let's try creating a link to go somewhere else. So rather than just having a home page, let's also have an about page. And so we're going to store this about page in something called about.html. And then since this is a cat store, I guess we can have a page that's dedicated to cats or something. So we'll have a link, cats, and this will go to cats.html. And so now if I come back to my web browser, you'll notice that the page still looks the same, right? And that's just because I've changed the file locally, and the web browser doesn't know that the file is changed. So in order to kind of reload the version of the page that I just created, I can come up here to the top left and just click on refresh. And now we can see that we just created a bulleted list where we have three links on the side here. So if I click on the home page, then that didn't do anything because I'm back in the same place. But if I click on about, you'll notice here that this URL changed to 1/about.html. And because this file doesn't exist yet, just I haven't created it, my web browser is telling me this is a 404 error, this page wasn't found. So let's go ahead and create this about.html. So I'm going to highlight all of this and just copy it so I don't have to retype everything over and over again. Now I'm going to come up here and I'm going to say file, new, and I'm just going to create a new empty text document. So I'm going to paste this in, and now I'm going to save this, file, save. And again, I'm just going to save it in this same folder, so lecture 8.1. And now I'm going to call this about.html. So now when I click save, I have two files inside of this folder, about.html and index.html. So what do we want this about page to say? Well, let's just put a simple message here saying something like, Tommy's cat store is independently owned and operated, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we'll save that. And so let's now jump back to the web browser. So you notice before, this about.html did not exist. So if I click refresh and visit this URL again, then we'll get the web page that we just created here. And so now if I click on home, I can navigate back and forth between these two web pages. And so finally, let's do something a little bit more complex on this third page here, this cats.html. So what I want to do here is I kind of want to display a few images of some of the cats we might sell, as well as maybe some information that's lined up nicely underneath those images. You know, browsing Amazon or eBay, you might see the product, picture of the product, and then maybe the price or the name of it, or you know, how many stars it has. And everything is kind of nicely aligned. So one way that I can do that, in kind of a simple way, is to take advantage of the HTML table element. Right? I'm kind of creating a table here where every row of the table is either a photo or some text about it, and every column is a different cat that I'm selling. So let's create this other page here. So again, let's just highlight everything, copy it, say file, new, text document. We'll paste this in and say file, save. And again, we're just going to save this as cats.html. OK, so let's say that I have three cats that I want to display on this page. So I have three photos. And underneath each of those photos, I just want to have some information. So that suggests that I want to create a table. And so inside of this table, I'm going to have two rows. There's going to be a row filled with photos, and then there will be a row filled with text. So to create a new row, I'm going to say tr. I'm going to open up a new table row. So I'll close this table row just so I don't forget. Now inside of this row, I want to have multiple cells. So I'm going to have one cell for each photo I'm going to display in this table. So when I say td, this says open up a new cell. And then inside of this, I want to have an image. So I'm going to say img src equals. And then I happen to have, of course, some cat photos ready to go. So I have cat1.jpg. You notice here that I want to make sure I close my image tag so that every open tag has a corresponding closing tag. So I want to close this image tag, and then I want to make sure that I close this table cell tag. So I can close this TD. And so I said I had three of them, and I do. So if we just paste this twice, make sure everything is indented nicely. And we'll just change this to 2 and 3. So there's one row of my table. And so now I want to have another row. So to do that, after I've closed off this TR, I'm going to open up a new TR. So TR, close off this TR. And again, because this table should be, you know, a rectangle, that means if I have three cells in the first row, I probably want to have three cells in the bottom row. So that means I'm going to need to say TD, open and close a table cell 1, 2, 3 times. So, you know, and then I can say something about the cats, like this one's black and white, this one's striped, and this one is upside down. So let me just take some photos now that I've already downloaded from the web. And we're just going to take these, and we're going to copy these, and we're just going to put them into the same exact folder as our HTML documents. Notice here, when we said this SRC, we just said, OK, it's going to be cat1.jpg. So if, for example, I had a folder instead, where I wanted to have, you know, a folder of all of my images, and if I create a new folder here, it says something like images, and I put my cat photos in there. So instead of now just saying cat1.jpg, I would say images/cat1.jpg. So let me just do that for all of these now. So images, images. Now I make sure that I'm going to save this HTML document. And just to recap, we're now looking at three HTML documents inside of a folder here called images and three JPEGs. So if I come back to my web browser and refresh this page, we get something that looks like this. So here are the three images that I just created, 1, 2, 3. And notice here how, because this is a table, you can kind of see where the table cells begin and end. You notice here that this text here in the middle is kind of lined up nicely with the edge of this image, and this text down here is also lined up nicely with the end of this image. And so that's a really, really basic HTML page using a few of the elements we've seen. So just to recap, we saw the h1 tag up here. We use the ul tag to create this bulleted list. And each of these list items here is an li tag with an a tag for anchor or hyperlink inside of it. And everything down here uses the table tag with the image tag or img tag for each of these pictures. So we just wrote some HTML. But there's a chance that I could have messed something up, right? You know, maybe I haven't written HTML before and I don't remember the name of a tag, or, you know, I've left a tag open without closing it. So when a web browser tries to display that page, it might run into some problems. So even though it might work on the web browser you're using, you know, maybe you're using the latest version of Google Chrome, if someone else is using a different web browser that doesn't know how to handle, you know, you leaving a tag open or something like that, then your web page might not display correctly. So luckily, we actually have a service that's going to validate and make sure that the HTML we've typed in is correct. So if I go to a site called validator.w3.org, so W3 is www, so this is the organization that runs the World Wide Web, has nicely provided this tool just to make sure that all of the HTML on the web is following the same standards. So if I head to the site over here, you know, this is pretty nice. I can validate, I can give it a URL, and this is going to tell me if the HTML is valid and everything is written correctly. I can upload a .html file, or we can just do this, where we can literally just type in some HTML into this text box. So let's pop open this page here. I'm just going to highlight everything. I'm going to copy it. I'm going to come back to my web browser, and I'm going to paste it. Notice here, this is just the same HTML that I just typed. Now when I click check, I promise it's a slow internet connection. It's not taking a while for it to check. Let's try again. Check. There we go. Okay, so we have some problems with our HTML. So let's take a look at what those might be. So we have this thing here. An image element must have an alt attribute except under certain conditions. So what does that mean? Well, it looks a little bit cryptic, but let's just break it down. So we have an img element. Okay, we know what that is. We have this thing called an image tag. And so that must be the image element that it's talking about. And it even tells us here's where we have some error. And it must have an alt attribute. So we said here that this src was called an attribute, which was just a key value pair that added some additional information about the tag. And so we're saying that this is telling me that, okay, if I'm going to have an image tag, I really also need to specify this other attribute called alt. And what this alt attribute is called the alt text, or the alternate text that will display on your web browser if the image can't load. So for accessibility reasons, this is really helpful so that a screen reader, for example, can know what to say in the absence of an image. Or also if for some reason your image can't load and you might want to have some text displayed, or when the user hovers over an image to have some text there. So all of this is wrapped into this attribute here called alt. So I'm just going to type in alt, and this is just going to be cat1, and same thing here. ALT equals cat2, and ALT equals cat3. Okay, I'm going to copy and paste this again, come back to the web browser, paste it in here, and we're going to recheck everything, and now we're good to go. So whenever you're writing an HTML page, this is a really good idea. Make sure that all of your HTML validates. Or if you know you're having some trouble and you're not sure why your web page kind of looks weird, even though you know what you think the HTML should display doesn't really quite match what the web browser thinks should be displayed, the validator is a really good way to find things like a missing close tag. So if I forgot this TD, for example, so I have this TD here that's opened and it's never closed. If I run this through the validator, then I'm not sure. But in general, you know, having mistakes like this, the validator will catch them, except there. OK, so HTML really then is used to describe the structure of our web pages. It's saying that this element is a header. But really, that doesn't really say anything about what that element should look like. So even though the browser kind of said, OK, well, this is a header, so I'm going to make this big and bold, All HTML is saying is that this is a header, not necessarily what the header looks like. So all of these different aesthetic details are kind of pushed off to something else called CSS. And so older versions of HTML used to have attributes that you could change the color of text or the background color, but those aren't recommended anymore. Instead, what we really want to do is separate the structure of our document and the presentation of our document, or the aesthetics of the document. So having these two separate languages is kind of annoying because there's two different things you have to learn, but it kind of results in nicer design because you have your content over here and you have what your content looks like over here. So they're just kind of separate. So the way CSS works is CSS is going to say, okay, on some HTML page, there's a bunch of stuff, and I'm going to pick out some of that stuff, and I'm going to change how it looks. So the first thing we need to do is tell CSS what stuff we're going to change the appearance of. And to do that, we're going to use these things called selectors. And selectors are, you can think of them kind of like SQL. So we saw SQL as some way to query a database. So we had a database with a million rows, and we just issued it some query and said, OK, I only want the rows matching this attribute. So you know, only the cats who have a preference of being indoor. So the same thing is going to happen with CSS. We're going to have a bunch of tags and elements on our HTML page. But we don't want to make them all pink or make them all some kind of style. So a CSS selector is basically going to limit what elements on the page we're going to apply style to or kind of change the appearance of. So the most basic selector looks like this. So if we just have the selector that looks like the character P, what that's going to do is it's going to say, I want to style every single paragraph tag. So no matter where your P tag is on the page, if you have a selector of P, it's going to target that paragraph tag. So that's kind of suboptimal. We might want to have, you know, one paragraph be red and another paragraph be blue. So we can also have a selector that looks like this. So we have a hashtag here, and this isn't like a Twitter hashtag, though it's the same character. But this is saying, this hashtag foo, is we're saying, I want to target every element or every opening tag that has the attribute ID equal to foo. So this ID attribute is something that we can apply to any tag or any element on our page. So this ID, as it suggests, should also be unique, right? We really don't want to have two elements on the same on our page having the same ID, since that's not really a good ID. And so we can attach this attribute here, ID, and inside of this give it a value of anything we want. And now we have a way of uniquely identifying an element on the page. And so now if I said hashtag foo, it's only going to target this paragraph here. And so now we kind of have two extremes. We have every paragraph on the page or one paragraph on the page. So finally, the middle ground between these two things is this selector here. So it's kind of hard to see, but we have a dot or a period followed by the word bar. And so where hashtag foo got the element with the ID foo, which, you know, there should only be one of them, this dot bar is going to get every element that has this attribute class equal to bar. So the problem with IDs is we said, well, the ID should be unique. You know, that's kind of what an ID is. But a lot of times we might want to apply the same style to multiple elements. And so that's what this class is. This class is just an identifier that says, I want to do something to all of these elements that have a class, for example, of bar. So these are the three ways, and we can, you know, we can combine these a little bit, but these are basically the three things that we can use to figure out what elements on the page to style. So once we have selected some elements from the page, we say we want to change these things, we have to say what we want to do to them. And so after our selector, it's going to be a series of rules. And these rules are just going to be key value pairs. So for example, our rule could look something like this. We want to say color is going to be blue. And so we have some other stuff here as well. So this, for example, is one block of CSS, one CSS rule here. So the first thing we have in our rule is our selector. So we're saying, okay, we want to target this element that has an ID of foo, because we have the hashtag followed by the word foo. After that, we have these curly braces. And so these curly braces allow us to do more than one thing at once. So if we wanted to make this color blue and make the font size, you know, 24, then we could do that, both of these things, inside of these curly braces. So we didn't have to write hashtag foo, font size, you know, over and over again. This is just kind of a nice shortcut. So now we have the meat of this, and this is the key value pair. So we have this key of color. And so again, these keys are just something that are specified by CSS. Just like the img tag and the attributes were specified by HTML, similarly, some other smart people got together and they wrote up a specification for CSS. And so that specification says, if you want to change the color of something, well, then you're going to write a key of color followed by a colon. And then after that, you're going to have what you want the color to be. So notice here, I could just type in blue, and that works. We can also specify colors, as we saw a few weeks ago, using RGB values. So we have that hashtag followed by six letters. Or we could even specify the actual numbers for R, G, and B to kind of make whatever color we want. But CSS is nice, and it says if I type in the word blue, this is the same thing as saying something like 0000FF, which says no red, no green, but a lot of blue. So finally, the last thing on this line that's important is this semicolon. And this semicolon says this is just one rule. So we said before that I can have multiple rules inside of these curly braces. And so the way CSS says to finish off a rule is with this semicolon here. So after the semicolon, you probably want to hit enter or something, and then have some more key value pairs where you can do more than just change the color of something, for example. So here are some other stuff we can do. So here's another set of CSS rules. So at the beginning here, we have this selector. This is going to select all of the elements with the class bar. What is it going to do to them? Well, we're going to say we have a background of red. So this is the background color. Then we can set the width for example, to 300 pixels. So now every element with the class bar is going to be exactly 300 pixels wide when it's displayed on my web browser. So here's another one. I'm going to now select every paragraph, so anything inside of a p tag. I'm not going to say this. The size of that font is going to be 18 pixels. So it'll just make it a little bigger. And so now let's talk a little bit about positioning elements on the page. So CSS has this thing called the box model. And the box model basically describes how elements relate to each other on the page. So here's a bunch of boxes that describe the box model. So let's say that inside of here, that this content thing is an image, or a paragraph tag, or a heading, or really any tag you want. So if I have, for example, an image tag, and that image is about 200 pixels wide, or exactly 200 pixels wide, then that will fill up this content area. So now we have this 200 pixel area. So what I can do in CSS, you know, via a property called border, is put a border around stuff. And so that means that somewhere around the image, there can be a black border or really anything you want, but you might not want that border exactly around the outline of the image. You know, you actually might want that. You might want a little bit of space between the end of the image and the start of the border. And so you can control that space with something called padding. So in addition to padding, on the other side of this border, we have something called the margin. And so the margin is simply the space between, you know, the border of one element and the border of another element. So we kind of have two knobs that we can turn when we're positioning elements on the page. So here's what some CSS rules might look like. So for example, if I specify a margin of 10 pixels, what I just said was that I want this area here to be 10 pixels. So if I have this, for example, as a hyperlink, so if I have two hyperlinks next to each other, I want there to be 10 pixels separating those two hyperlinks. So let's actually take a look at the selector, because this is a little bit different. It kind of looks like we've combined two things here. We have here a hashtag navbar, and then we have an A. So what this is doing is this is performing a little bit, we're kind of narrowing down our selection. So what we just said here is the first thing we want to select is this thing with an ID of navbar. So inside of that navbar, that navigation bar, we probably have a set of links, right? If we look back to the web page we just created, we had a UL, and inside of that UL were some A tags that were actually links. So by using a CSS selector that looks like this, we're going to say first, select the navbar, which could be an unordered list, for example, with the ID navbar. And inside of that, there were probably a bunch of A tags. Now, for all of the A tags that are only inside of navbar, then I want to set those margins. So that means if I have other hyperlinks that are outside of the navigation bar on my page, then they won't be affected by this rule, because I said I want to start with this navbar and only hit the A tags that are contained within that navbar tag, or not navbar tag, but the tag with the ID navbar. So again, here's another one. So now we're setting the padding value. And again, this just says that if I have some element on the page, then I want there to be 10 pixels around it, such that if I were to draw a border, that border would be kind of 10 pixels away on every side, so top, bottom, left, and right. And the selector here now looks a little bit different. So now we have an H1 comma P. So this is saying, rather than starting at every H1 and then looking at all the paragraph tags inside of that H1, which probably doesn't make too much sense, what this comma here does is this is saying that this selector is going to be every H1 tag and every P tag. So this comma is basically saying if you're an H1 or you're a paragraph, then I want to apply this style rule. So if I said said something like, you know, H1 padding 10 pixels, P padding 10 pixels, padding 10 pixels, this would be the exact same thing. This is kind of a nice shorthand to apply the same set of styles to different types of elements. So we've seen here a couple different types of elements, for example, images and hyperlinks and headings. And we kind of have two notions of positioning with these elements. So if I put a hyperlink on a page, you know, I might put that hyperlink in the middle of some text, like a hyperlink in the middle of a paragraph. What I probably wouldn't do, though, is put a big heading in the middle of a paragraph. Right? That doesn't really make any sense. Instead, I kind of want each heading kind of stand on its own line. So the positioning of that heading would be called, in CSS, a block level element. So that means that if I have a block level element and then some stuff after it, it's going to be positioned underneath the block level element. So if we jump back to our web page, so we've actually already seen this. So we have here a block level element, and you notice that this UL wasn't placed next to my heading. That's because both of these things are both block level. They want their own line on the page. They don't want to be put next to anything. They want kind of their own line. So the opposite of this would be an inline element. So for example, this A tag is inline, right? This A tag is inside of an LI tag, but this A didn't say, I want my own line. It said, okay, well, I'm okay with being on the same line as the bullet. Else we'd have like a bullet, then underneath it a link, and then a bullet, and underneath it a link, and that just wouldn't really make any sense. And so that's the difference, and we'll see the importance of it a bit later with an example, but just be aware of when you're putting elements on the page that some of these elements are block elements and some of these are inline elements, and that just describes whether or not they want their own line when they're displayed on the page. So that's all about CSS, but how do we get CSS on our page? So one way to do this is with this tag called the style tag. So inside of the style tag is where we can actually switch, basically, from HTML to CSS. So let's take a look at a quick example. So let's say that I'm on my index.html page. And now let's say that I want to, and rather than having this nav bar kind of be just a bulleted list with each bullet on its own line, let's say that I instead want all of the bullets on the same line. So let's see how we could do that. So the first thing I want to do probably, or rather than doing that, let's actually first, rather than putting the nav bar above everything, let's just put it next to the page. And then we'll see how we can accomplish that other thing in just a minute. So the first thing we want to do is we want to figure out how can I style this nav bar. So one way I might do it is I might say an ID here of nav bar. But let's actually use another tag to give my page a little bit more organization. So this tag here is called a div. And a div is basically just this logical block of stuff inside of your page. So this navbar kind of forms a nice logical block of stuff. So I might have a div here, and then I might have another div, and this is kind of where my main page content is. So something like main page content. And so now I have kind of two sections to my page, the nav bar at the top and the contents at the bottom. And so let's say that I instead want the nav bar to the left and the contents to the right. So first, let's give both of these things IDs. So let's call this nav bar, as we've been saying. Let's call this div content. And so again, these divs don't really do anything other than create some logical structure to my web pages, this logical grouping of things. Okay. So now let's add some CSS to the page. So inside of my head tag, I'm going to open up a style tag. I'm going to remember to close it. And so now, inside of here, here is where I can actually apply some aesthetic changes to my web page. So let's first say, OK, let's target the nav bar first. And I want my nav bar to only take up kind of the left-hand side of the page. So let's say I'm going to give it the first 300 pixels of the page. So if I say width 300 pics, now we're saying, OK, navbar, you are only 300 pixels wide. OK, so that's nice. So currently, both of these divs are block-level elements. So if I come back to the page and I click on Home, so you notice here that this div is a block, and this div is a block, and so they're kind of on top of each other. But I don't want that. I want them to be next to each other. So what I can do is I can change this display property to say, you know what, I don't want this div to have its own line. I want it to be, you know, okay sharing a line with somebody else. So if I say display this inline-block, this is just a value inside of CSS that says, you know what, you don't get your own line. You're going to be okay sharing a line with somebody else. So I want to do the same thing to this other div I created with this ID content. So I'm going to say hashtag content. And again, display inline block. And so now what I've just done is I've just created two divs, and rather than requesting their own line, they're now going to be next to each other. So when I refresh this page, I get something that looks like this. We have the nav bar over here to the left. You notice that this is 300 pixels. And then over here to the right is my other div. And because the display value is now they're inline instead of block level, they can be next to each other. So let's take a 5-minute break, and then we'll see some cooler things we can do with CSS. All right, so we're back. So last time, we saw how we could embed some CSS into our HTML page via this style tag. But that might be kind of annoying. So if we jump back to our HTML that we got back, there's a couple disadvantages here. So the first is this one HTML page might start to get a little unwieldy, right? It's kind of divided into two spots. At the top, we have all the CSS, and if we have a lot of rules, this will get really long. And at the bottom, we have all of our HTML, and if we have a lot of HTML, that will get really long, and this will be kind of unwieldy to navigate. So another problem is that you notice here that our HTML site now has three different pages to it. So now if I go to about.html, for example, we no longer have that CSS at the top of the page. So if we wanted to change something, we'd have to copy all the CSS over, put that on that HTML page, and every time we wanted to change the CSS, we'd have to make that same change on a bunch of different HTML pages. So that's kind of annoying. So what would be really nice to do is kind of separate all of this CSS out into its own separate file. And so the way we can do that is with this HTML tag called link. And what this will do is this will say, OK, somewhere on the server, there's some other CSS file with some rules in it. And I'm going to download that and then apply the rules from that separate file to the current HTML page that I'm looking at. So let's take a look at how we can use this. So if we come back here, I'm going to create a new file. I'm going to click Save. And I'm going to come in here, again, just lecture 8.1. And I'm going to call this now, rather than untitled text 4, I'm going to call this styles.css. So that means that inside of this file is only going to be CSS. So when I click Save, now if I come back to index, and I take this, I'm just going to copy it. And now I'm going to put it inside of style.css. So you'll notice that there's no doc type here, there's nothing else. There's just a set of CSS rules inside of styles.css. So now if I come back to index, I can delete all of this, and I can delete the style tag that I made. So now, in order to tell the web browser, OK, you have an HTML page, but there are some styles located in another file, what we can do is we can say link. And now we have a couple of attributes. So the first of these is this rel attribute. This is just saying, OK, web browser, I'm going to tell you I'm linking to this thing called a style sheet. So a style sheet is simply a file with only CSS rules. So CSS stands for cascading style sheets. And so that's where that term comes from. So we also need to say, where is this CSS file located? So again, we saw href was used to tell where a link is actually going. Href here is going to say, where is the style sheet located? So we called our styles file styles.css. And then finally, we can just close off the link tag like this. So now, if we jump back to our page and refresh, now we see the exact same thing. But if we view the source of the page, we notice now that there's no more style element. Everything has been kind of factored out into this styles.css file. So let's take a quick break from CSS and HTML, and talk about how you might go about actually setting up your own website. So we've kind of covered these steps kind of separately in different lectures, the different things you need to actually do to get yourself up and running with a website. So let's just kind of recap those. So the first thing you'll probably want to do when setting up a website is find some kind of domain name. So domain name, remember, is just some way of easily mapping some human-readable thing to an IP address. And the IP address is just a locator for the machine you're going to put those HTML files on. So remember that, you know, as I'm looking at my website here, these HTML files are just sitting on my MacBook's hard drive. So instead of having them sit there, I want them to sit on some machine that other people on the internet can access. So that means that I'm going to need to find one of those machines. But just as an aside, one quick way of finding available domain names is this thing called instant domain name search. And so this is really cool. If I start typing something like Tommy, then my name, you'll notice how it's checking all the .net, the .org, the .biz, .mobi, .co, and all these things all at once. And so this is really nice. But I might also go to a registrar like GoDaddy and then just search, is TommyMac.com, is this taken or not? And when I click search, with a faster internet, it's going to tell me, nope, it's already registered, but here are some other options that are available. So you're going to need to find a domain name that hasn't already been taken by anyone else. So unfortunately, the longer that the internet exists with just these same TLDs, the kind of fewer domain names are going to be available as more people try to buy them. So it's becoming increasingly common to use these kind of cute TLDs, as we saw before, like .me or .co, rather than just .com and .org. So once you have a domain name, purchased from one of these registrars, which remember we saw is just some organization, you pay them something like $10 a month, and they interface with the ICANN or the actual organization that handles, putting your domain name inside of the DNS system. And these are just a few of these companies, GoDaddy, Namecheap, they're all pretty much the same thing. They charge around the same price just to give you some domain name that you can use. So once you have this domain name, you're going to need to find something called a web host. As we were just saying, a web host is just some place you can put your files so they're accessible on the internet. So here are just a few web hosts. So 1&1, we have DreamHost. I happen to use one called Linode. But real, all of these services are is they charge you, again, some monthly fee to kind of rent out some machine that's located somewhere else on the internet and allow you to put your files there. So after we have both a domain name and a host, we kind of need to sync them up. So a lot of services now, like DreamHost, will say, for this additional small fee, we'll also buy you a domain name and set everything up for you. But in the event you set them up by them separately, you'll also need to kind of link them together. And I'll show you how we can do that in just a moment. But finally, once you have your domain name, it points at your host, then it's time to actually put your files on the server. So let's just walk through a couple of these steps and what that might look like. So the first thing I did was I bought a domain. And so if I log into my GoDaddy account here, if I click on domains, and I have to log in again. Okay, take two. So if I click on domains, here are just some of the domains that I've registered. If I click on launch, I'm going to look at the CSE1.net domain that I've purchased here. And then we have a whole bunch of options. But I said before that I'm hosting my website on another service called Linode. And so to tell GoDaddy, hey, I want you to point this domain to Linode, is we're going to need to set these name servers. And we saw these recall when we looked at DNS and the different types of DNS records. And what these say is any time that someone is trying to look up CSE1.net, I want you to go to some other name server who's actually going to give you an answer for where this domain is pointing to. So we're saying that even though I registered the domain with GoDaddy, whenever a request is made to that domain, we're going to forward that request along to Linode, and Linode is going to give us the actual IP address. So GoDaddy did not give us an IP address. It just gave us a domain name that needs to map to something else. So that's my domain. And so this is what my host looks like. And we saw this page earlier when we looked at the different types of DNS records. But you notice here that this is now an IP address. And this is the IP address of the machine that I'm renting from Linode for some monthly fee. And so now I've mapped my domain to this machine by setting those name servers back at GoDaddy. So finally, let's take a look at how I can actually get files from my computer to this machine. So there's a couple of ways we can do this. One of them is called FTP, for file transfer protocol, which some servers will only support. But if your web host does support this thing called SFTP, or Secure File Transfer Protocol, you probably want to use that. Just like if you can use HTTPS, you probably want to use that instead of just HTTP. So we have a section video that's just all about buying a domain name, and then another video that's all about actually uploading your files to some web host. But let's just go really quickly what this might look like. So I've already connected to this web host, CSE1.net. So we can see here that I'm looking somewhere in CSE1.net. And over here is just some files that are already on my computer. So if I look in here, for example, and I want to take this file that's on my computer and actually upload to the server on the internet, I can just drag and drop this folder here and drop it over there. And down the bottom, we see that a bunch of stuff is trying to connect. Something is hanging. Okay. So now I've just uploaded everything on my MacBook to some other machine that I'm renting on the internet. So now, over here on the right, this is that machine that I'm renting. If I go into this directory one, here are the files that we had just created when we were making our HTML page. So now, if I open up a web browser and I go to cse1.net/1, then I'm going to see the web page that I just made, but now accessible at some URL that someone else can actually type in. And so that's kind of the process that you can use if you want to develop a web page on your computer and then make it available to anyone else on the internet. We can just download a program, whether it be FTP or SFTP, and all this program does is it copies files from your local machine onto some other machine on the internet. So definitely check out the section videos for more information about this process. But it was really, really simple. All I did was I said, here's my domain name, and here's the username and password that my hosting provider gave me. And then I can just drag and drop from my machine to the host. OK, so now let's come back to CSS and try to do something that's a bit fancier. So CSS is really commonly used to kind of lay out elements on the page to be where you want them. This process can be a little bit complicated, so let's just look at a few different examples of approaches we might take to get a web page. So we saw before that this thing called div is just a block-level tag that's used to organize things into these logical groups. And so usually web pages have these things all over the place. So if we look at, for example, this is the source of twitter.com, you'll notice here that we have a div, a div, a div, a div, a div, a div. And so basically, this is just grouping things into these logical blocks. So you notice here that each of these has different classes. And the reason being, so now we can actually access these different divs via our CSS rules. So we're going to kind of take the same approach. But in addition to div, that's one way of logically grouping elements into a block. We also have this other element called a span. And this is a way, rather than grouping elements into blocks, we want to create these inline groups instead. So a span might span, you know, one line in a paragraph, where a div might group together several paragraphs or a nav bar. So finally, inside of both your HTML and CSS, you can leave these things called comments. And a comment is simply a note to yourself as the web developer now that kind of explains what you might be doing somewhere. So if we jump back to my HTML, now here I have this page. You can imagine that this is going to get really long and complicated. And if I come back to this page a week later, I might totally forget what everything represents. So what I can do to kind of remind myself of where things are is I can insert an HTML comment. So if I type in this angle bracket followed by an exclamation mark and then hyphen hyphen or two dashes, which is kind of a weird thing, but now, after this, I can start typing something like navigation bar. And now type in dash dash close. This is just kind of a strange syntax, but I have two dashes to open this up and then two dashes to close it. So now this text here will not actually be displayed on the page. This is simply a way for me to insert notes into my HTML code so I can remind myself or anyone else who might be reading it what's going on. So when your web browser downloads this HTML page and displays it, it will totally ignore everything that's in between this thing and this thing. So we can do the same thing in our CSS, just the way we create a comment is a little bit different. Instead of saying this angle bracket exclamation mark dash dash, we're instead going to say slash star, and this says, I've begun a comment, here's a note to yourself. I could say a navigation bar, and then a star slash is going to say, okay, my note to myself is over. And so again, these are just notes to yourself, so that won't actually affect anything about how your page is displayed or any of the CSS rules that you've created. Okay, so let's jump back. So the web page I want to create using my knowledge of CSS is this page here, Mashable. And so this is just kind of a nice news site that I like to read. And I like a couple of things about this site. So I really like this nav bar at the top, and I also like these blocks of content here. You know, I just like the way that these are organized. And so what I'd like to do is I kind of want to recreate these effects using CSS on my own computer. So to do that, let's just close out these existing files here so we can save these changes. And I'm going to create a brand new page. So I'll open this up, save file, save. Inside of my Lecture 8 folder, I'm just going to create a new one. We'll call it 2, since this is our second example. And we'll call this file index.html. So again, we're just kind of starting fresh here. But now I want to create a different looking page. But the way I start this new HTML page is exactly the same. I'm going to say doctype HTML to say, here comes some HTML. Open up an HTML tag that says everything inside of here is HTML. We'll have a page title that says like E1 News. Close the title tag, close the head tag. We'll have a body tag that will open and close. And this is the basic skeleton of the HTML page that we saw before. So the first thing I want to do is make this navigation bar. So I probably want to create some div, just like I did last time, with an ID of navbar. But this time I'm simply going to apply some different CSS rules so that doesn't end up on the left side of the page. So we're going to take the same approach as last time. We'll just have an unordered list here. And I'll also have something like li, and some of the categories in Mashable are social media. But we want each of these things to be clickable, so we're actually going to make them links. So we'll say A. And you notice that, you know, we're not going to worry about what clicking on these actually does yet. So for our href attribute, we're just going to put a hashtag. Whoa. So we're just going to put a hashtag here as our href value. And this is just telling the browser, just don't do anything when you click on this. And you're actually making a website, you'll probably want to do something like we did before and put in something.html here. So some of the other categories they have, you know, maybe they have something on tech, maybe they have something on cats, you know, whatever. So this is just a nav bar with some stuff in it. And so now underneath our nav bar, we probably want to have something else. So just like we did last time, we're going to separate out our nav bar and the main page content like this. So if we open this up in a web browser, we're going to see kind of the same thing that we saw before. We have a really boring really boring bulleted list, and these links just kind of look lame. So let's use CSS to make this look a bit nicer. So the first thing I want to do is get rid of this Times New Roman font, because I don't really like it. So let's just make a style element. We could have also made a separate CSS file and kind of linked that in. But just for simplicity, let's put everything here. And so everything that's inside of the body tag, for example, I'm going to say I want the font to just be some generic font like Arial or Verdana or something that isn't that boring Times New Roman. So okay, so we've gotten rid of that. So that's a good step. So another step I might want to take to get that Mashable is to get that nice blue in the back of the navigation bar. So let's highlight the nav bar. We're going to say that the background now, I want to change the color. And so let's say that I have the RGB value, for example. So if I type in RGB, I can specify now a red, a green, and a blue. So Mashable happens to use something like 42, 164, and 207. So again, I'm ending this line with a semicolon. And notice, I could also express this using a hashtag and then two letters followed by two more letters and two more letters. This is just a different way that CSS allows me to express colors. And it's just kind of a little bit more readable. So that's nice. So now, if I come back to my page, I'm going to get something that looks like that, which might be worse. So this is totally unreadable. We kind of have this, you know, blue text, and we want to get rid of these bullets because that doesn't really make sense anymore. So let's change what the actual A tags inside of my navbar look like. So the first thing I want to do is I want to make them white. That'll just be much easier to read. I want to get rid of that underline since I don't really like the way that looks. So if I say text decoration, I can say none, since the underline is a kind of decoration on my letters. Now I kind of want them to be spaced apart a little bit, so I'm going to give these some padding. So I have a padding now of 10 pixels. Now they're a little less smushed. So the other thing I wanted to do, I said, is I want to get rid of those bullets, and I want to put these things on the same line. So the way to get rid of these bullets is I'm going to say, OK, I'm going to start off with the navbar, and I want to get this UL tag. So the UL has this thing called a list style. And so if I have this list style type, again, this is just another random CSS property. And if I say none, what this will say is, OK, we're going to have a list, but I don't want you to display any bullets. So I also might want to get rid of some margin there. And so if I refresh the page, OK, this looks a little nicer. So it's white, there's no more underline, and there's no more bullets. So OK, so now how can I make all of these things on the same line? So we saw last time that the way to do that was to change things from a block to an inline. So we're going to do the same exact thing here. So rather than allowing each of these LIs to be a block level element so it gets its own line, we're just going to say, hey, I want you to be an inline element. So now if we come back, this is much nicer. Now we have a list and kind of a nicely organized thing, but now instead of being displayed vertically, we're displaying all of our links horizontally. OK, so that's kind of nice, but this still looks, you know, a little bit smushed, so I don't really want to keep that. So let's add something else. So what Mashable allows me to do, and a lot of other websites, is when I hover over something, it changes a little bit. You know, it might change color or, you know, some other indication to let me know that my mouse is on top of it. So I want to do the same thing. So to do that, I can use this thing called a pseudo class. And this colon hover says, here come some more CSS rules that are only going to be applied when I have my mouse on top of some element. So now I just want to change the color. And so let's just, for simplicity, let's just say that these are now red. So now whenever I hover over something, I'm going to get a red element. And so now, just one other thing to make these space out a little bit nicer. I want to make sure that the A's are also kind of inline, since they weren't before. So now when I refresh this page, I get something that looks like this. So we see here that we have this list, but because each of the elements is now inline, they're displayed side by side. Things are a little more spaced out because I've added padding to each of these elements. The background of this entire navigation bar is blue, so that means that even though my list ends over here, my navigation bar spans across the entire page since I made the whole background blue. And finally, when I hover over one of these A's, the entire background is going to go blue. So that's nice, but notice that there's a little bit of white space between the edge of the page and my navigation bar. So that's not something I specified. That's something that my browser actually thought it would be a good idea to do by default. And so this thing is called the user agent style sheet or the browser style sheet. And this is basically just a set of styles that your browser will apply by default to any web page. And in this case, I don't really like that. You know, I kind of want everything to line up with the page. And so to get rid of that space, what I can do is I can just say, I want there to be no margin on this, and I don't want there to be any padding either. So now when I refresh, I'm going to get rid of the margin or the padding or whatever it is that the browser added to make my navbar not hit the edge of the page. OK, So that's the first thing I wanted. The second thing I wanted was kind of that nice box for all of their stories. They kind of had a photo and then some text underneath it, and there was kind of a shadow around it, and that just looked kind of nice. So I want to design that too. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to write some HTML that kind of describes the structure of one of these story boxes, and then I'll apply some CSS to actually control what it looks like. So it makes sense that each of these boxes is going to be a div, because we're going to want to group all of these different components into this one logical block-level element. Now, we know that we're going to have more than just one of these boxes on the screen. So rather than giving this an ID, we're going to want to give this a class. So we'll say something like div class equals box. So now, what's going to go inside of my box? Well, the first thing that we saw in Mashable was they had this big image. So if we say an image, and for example, I have an image called lovecats.jpg, and so that'll be the image that's displayed in this block. Then I might want to do some other things like the category for this story. So, you know, the category here is cats. And, you know, my story might have something like a headline. Like, this was actually a story on Mashable the other day. Why do we love cats so much? Some more than others. And then finally, we can have something like preview text. Okay, so this is kind of a nice summary for one story. It's everything is grouped into this div class box, but I've also provided myself some ways of being able to style just this thing or just this thing down here. So if we come back to our web page, you know, our navbar looks kind of nice, but our story doesn't look so nice at all. So notice here that we're missing this image, so let me just copy the image that I downloaded from Mashable the other day into this folder. So I'm going to copy lovecats.jpg into the same folder as my HTML files, and now I refresh this, and I see something that looks like this. So okay, so let's now apply some CSS to style each of these elements, including the box. So let's start with the box itself. So Mashable says that, you know, to create this nice sense of organization, every box is just going to be the same size. And so the width that was displayed on my computer was 638 pixels. And so I'm just going to take that. Every box is exactly that many pixels wide. So each box also has a border around it. So this is a way to specify in CSS a border. We're going to say my border is going to be 1 pixel wide. It's just going to be a solid line. And it's going to be the color CC, CC, CC. So again, last time we saw that we can use RGB to specify a color. Now we're kind of back to the notion of color we saw a few weeks ago, with a hashtag followed by hexadecimal characters. Okay, so let's have a closing brace here. So if we come back, we really aren't going to see too much of a difference, except we now have this nice border that lines up nicely around our box. So let's kind of style the two pieces of text now. So if I want to look at every single headline that's only inside of one of these boxes, because I might have, you know, the same headline class elsewhere, I can say .box.headline. And so now this is going to say only the things with the class headline that are in something with the class box. So I can say something like, let's give this a bit of a margin. So on the left side, I want there to be 10 pixels of space. I want the text to be black. And let's say the font size is a little bit larger at 24 pixels. So now, if I close this out and refresh the page, okay, this looks a little bit more like a headline. So let's just quickly, rather than type this all out, let's just open up kind of a pre-made version. So let's jump ahead to this version here. So same exact thing. We've done all the same stuff. I've just kind of filled in a few blanks. So I've also done things like added some margin to the category, changed its font size a little bit. I have this thing here, which says whatever, if the text is currently lowercase, I want you to just make the whole thing uppercase. I've also added a shadow around the box. So this just says I want the shadow to be 2 pixels wide, and I kind of want it to be offset by 2 pixels to the right and 2 pixels down, which will just look pretty nice. And I've also just take a little bit of time to specify some margin on that paragraph tag and change the color a little bit. But at the end of the day, we're going to get something that looks like this. And so this looks pretty nice. This looks a little bit like what Mashable had. So we made this a little bit smaller. We changed the color. There's my shadow here down at the right and down at the bottom. And again, I've spaced things out nicely, so this isn't all smushed together. We have some space between the headline and some of the text there. But again, all of this was done using just CSS rules on that kind of boring vanilla HTML. You notice here that because I've specified a class of box, down here, I applied the exact same styling rules to another piece of HTML. So if I look at the source of this page, the HTML for these two boxes is totally identical. And because I've written my CSS in a way that it can apply to any box, I've kind of created a reusable component on my page. Anytime I need one of these boxes, I can just put div class box on my page. And that's really nice. You know, once I created this one box, I didn't have to write out the same thing for another box and so on. So we've just created this nice reusable thing. And so those are just some of the CSS rules that you might run into when designing your website. So it happens to be the case that a lot of people kind of want to do the same thing with CSS. And it would be really frustrating if all of us kind of had to reinvent the wheel. So there are a lot of libraries out there that are written by other people that do kind of what you might want to do with CSS. So a library is just, you know, a set of CSS files that someone else wrote that you can actually use on your website. So one of these libraries is called Bootstrap, and this was originally written by the people at Twitter. So if I jump back to the laptop. So this is what the Bootstrap homepage looks like. And if I click on Get Started, you know, once I download some CSS files, it looks like, what's included is all of these things. I get buttons, I get dropdowns. So here's what I might look like. So if I come over here to Components and click on, you know, dropdowns, I get things like this for free. You know, someone went through and took the time, you know, to make this a border, give it a nice shadow, make sure all the padding is lined up, make the color nice when I highlight over it. There's basically just a bunch of these reusable components in these libraries. So we have some buttons here, and these are just much nicer to look at than just kind of your run-of-the-mill button that you might create on your web page. And so this is just one library of basically reusable components that you might want to use on your web page. So let's take a look at how we might actually use some of these reusable components. So one thing that's really nice that Bootstrap and a lot of these other frameworks come with are these things called a grid system. So we saw before how we could align some navigation bar on the left and have some content on the right. And it was kind of frustrating. We had to figure out the width of the left side and say, okay, they're both in line. If we wanted to create even more columns, we'd kind of have to go through this process again and again, like do the math to figure out what the widths and the margins should be. And that's just going to be kind of frustrating. Luckily, it wasn't too frustrating for other people to do that for us. So Bootstrap, for example, allows you to take your page and split it up into a grid. So for example, you might want to have an element that is 3 grid blocks wide, and then an element next to that that is 4 grid blocks wide, or something like that. And the way that Bootstrap allows you to do that is really, really simple. So let's take a look at an example. So again, let's just kind of pull out a pre-made example rather than writing the whole thing ourselves. And again, all of these examples will be available to download after lecture today. So here's another news site. And this time we want to create something that looks more like the New York Times. And so the New York Times, as we saw last week, kind of smashes a lot of information onto the same page. You have multiple columns, and inside of each of those columns, you know, you have a different story. And so there are a few different columns that we want to create. So the first one over here is just some navigation bar, and here are just some story types taken from the New York Times. Then we have something in the middle that has some stories, and then we might have something on the right that has even more stories. So just to show you the finished product to kind of, you know, what we're aiming for, is we're aiming for something that looks like this. So we have a column here, we have a column here, and we have a column here. And so our goal was for this to be as painless as possible to kind of align things on the page like this. So luckily, we didn't actually have to write much CSS at all in order to do this. So here's something that Bootstrap did for us. So you'll notice here, I have a div, and I've given it a class of row. And so this is something that Bootstrap has given me, and it's a way of saying, okay, I want to start off a new row of content. So if we look back at this illustration of the grid here, so the grid kind of has these multiple rows. We have columns here, and then this row is split into a different number of columns, and this is a different number of columns. And so we're saying here with this div class row, so we're saying, okay, I want one of these, and I'm going to split up this row kind of however I want. So Bootstrap tells me that I have 12 columns to work with. So I'm going to have to figure out how I might want to split things up so that they all add up to 12 columns. Okay, so inside of my row, that means I'm going to create some divs. And each of the columns on the page that we just saw is going to be given by its own div. So to do that, I'm going to give it a class now that starts with the word span. And then this number afterwards is the number of columns that I want this column, the number of kind of blocks wide I want this column to be. So here, my column is 2 blocks. Remember, I have 12 to work with. So now, once I've said, okay, everything inside of this div is going to fall into a column that's kind of 2 blocks wide, then I can just write my HTML as normal. Here's that list. But because I've put it inside of this div, I'm kind of limiting the size of this to be inside of this column. Okay, so I'm going to close off this div, and now it's time for me to start another column. So here, instead of being span 2, I'm going to make this one a little bit wider and say now we have a span of 3. This is kind of 3 blocks wide. And again, I'm just going to have some HTML, and now this HTML, rather than being displayed underneath that nav bar we just created, it's going to be displayed to the right because it's in a new column. And so we'll take a look at the CSS behind this later, but notice we've just created a div for the headline, a div for the author, and then a div for a little summary of my news story. So finally, we have one more column here. This time we're spanning 5. You know, we don't always have to add up to 12. I just, you know, pick some random values here. And again, we have very similar HTML, a headline, an author, and a summary. And so that's all it takes for me to achieve this nice column effect. So simply because I've said that this thing here is span 3, notice how my text is wrapping. So to extend background checks isn't kind of running over into this other column here. And the way we did that was simply by saying we have this is going to span 3 blocks in our grid and no more than that. And so this is really nice. And so just really quickly to kind of look at the styles that were applied to this story here. So if we open up this time in a separate file, if we open up styles.css, you know, this is pretty simple. We just said I want my headline to be a little bit bigger. You notice this thing here called the line height. And this is simply, as you might expect, kind of the space between lines of text. So I wanted my text to be spaced out vertically a little bit. So I've given this a larger value. I've just changed some colors. And I really just kind of did the same exact things I did last time. So again, all of these CSS properties, you know, there are a lot of them, but we're going to kind of keep running into the same ones over and over again because we're going to want to do some common things on every web page. And so by the way, if you're ever looking at a web page, you kind of want to figure out, you know, what CSS styles have been applied to something, or maybe even tweak the CSS styles of an existing website, you can use this thing in your web browser called the inspector or the developer toolbar or whatever your browser happens to call it. So if I right-click inside of any HTML element, and I click this here, inspect element, and I click this, I'm going to get this thing down here. And so this should look familiar. This is just the HTML source of the page that we just looked at. And so notice here that I happen to have already highlighted this div here that's corresponding to the headline. So let's say that I want to make some changes. So let's say that rather than having this be 24 pixels wide, I want this to be 32 pixels wide, or 32 pixels, that's the font size. So what I could do is I could come back to my CSS file, I could find the right thing, change the line, save it, come back to the web browser, and refresh. So as you're developing your own website, you're going to find that that process is kind of frustrating and annoying. So what we can do instead is if we come over here, we see this element.style. If we actually just type in font size and just write some CSS, 32 pixels, hit enter, when I zoom out, we actually just made this text a lot bigger without actually doing anything. So I can actually do this on any web page I want. Right? Even if I didn't write the HTML for a web page, I can still modify it. So you know, if I come back to GoDaddy, for example, and I can highlight this element, I can do the exact same thing. You know, I have a bunch of HTML here, and now there's a bunch of CSS that has been applied to all of these things. But I can do the same thing. I can modify this, and I can change what the website looks like, you know, just to kind of play around with things and figure things out. So for example, if I click delete there, what I just did is I just deleted that big thing on the web page. So of course, you know, I'm not actually changing GoDaddy.com itself. I've kind of changed how it looks for me right now, you know, but there's no way for me to actually save the changes I made to GoDaddy.com, else that would be a pretty big security hole. So you know, if I just refresh this page, we're going to go back to what we saw before. So these changes are just going to happen to me locally as I'm looking at a page in a web browser, and there's no way for me to like save those changes so my friend can see them. But the Web Inspector is a really helpful way not only to learn how other websites have styled the elements on their page, but also to kind of make quick changes to your website, and then later maybe copy those into a CSS file to save them permanently. So let's look at an example of what else Bootstrap can do for us. So let's open up another example here. Okay, so what I'd like to do now is I just kind of like to redesign the course homepage to use things that are given to me by Bootstrap. So let's look at the finished product first. So by opening up this index.html. So using Bootstrap, I can create something that looks like this. And this looks pretty nice. I mean, if I look at the top here, you know, this highlighted state looks pretty nice. This nav bar, the gradient is nice. You know, this looks pretty good, I think. And you know, as someone who's not a designer like me, you know, this might be kind of hard to figure out, like, what color should this be? How much space should be around this button? You know, how did I get this border thing to show up? And luckily, I really don't have to worry about much of that with Bootstrap because it's taking care of a lot of these components for me. So if I look at the actual HTML of this page, I've actually written no CSS at all. So we see here we're linking to this other CSS file here, and this is the Bootstrap CSS file. And so this is where someone else has written a bunch of different reusable components that I can now pull in to my own web page. So other than that, I have written zero CSS to get this really nice looking web page. You know, last time we wrote zero CSS, we just kind of had Times New Roman and blue links. Now we have something that looks like this. And so that's really cool. And so the way to do that is all we need to do is we need to appropriately use the classes that Bootstrap tells us to use. So for example, Bootstrap says that if you want to create a navbar, then all you need to do is create a div, give it a class of navbar, and then inside of that, you know, you can create an unordered list, and if you give that a class of nav, then I'll make it look really nice for you. And all of these rules, I just figured them out by reading the Bootstrap web page. So if I come over here to components, for example, one of these components is this navbar. And this is really nice of them. You know, they just have examples of exactly what you need to do in order to use their reusable component. So they say, okay, well, if you want a navbar that looks like this, then you need to do exactly what I just did. Make a div with a class of navbar. Inside of that, make another div. Then have a UL inside of that. And then in there, have the links inside of your navbar. So I didn't have to worry about styling that myself. And that was really, really nice. So some of the other things that Bootstrap gives me are these nice looking buttons. So for example, if I give something a class, a link, a regular old A, a class of button, then I'm going to get a nice button. If I want it to be blue, then I can say it's a button-primary. I can also say button-success for a green one. Or again, Bootstrap is just going to tell me the classes that I need to give things. And finally, you know, if I want it to be bigger, I can just say, oh, now it's a large button. And so again, this is what I might do if I were writing my own HTML web page. I'd create this structure, I'd give things classes and IDs, and then I'd have to apply styles to those IDs and classes. But what things like Bootstrap do is they've already taken care of that second step. They've created this set of styles, and you just kind of need to fill in the blanks and tell Bootstrap where you want to put the styles for buttons and nav bars and things like that. So just as one quick demo, something I can do with Bootstrap without doing anything else is create this thing. So this is a really nice like image carousel, right? You know, I can have like a slideshow of images, I can have some text down here. And again, I have written zero CSS, and I've written zero of any of the code that we'll see next week that makes it possible for me to click on something and have something happen. The only thing I needed to do, if we view the source of this page, is I just need to kind of follow Bootstrap's rules. If I want to have something that's an image carousel, I just need to create something with a class of carousel. And then again, I really just copy-pasted all of this from Bootstrap and just kind of filled in the blanks. I put in my own image, and I changed the text. And so this is something that's really, really powerful with some of these libraries that might be out there, is that a lot of the time, you don't have to worry about kind of the boring run-of-the-mill CSS to make, you know, a button look better. So you can focus on, you know, making your page look unique or more fun things than making a button not look bad. So Bootstrap isn't the only CSS framework out there. So here's another one that I like. It was recently released, so it's still kind of new, called Flat UI. And this just has a different look and feel to it than Bootstrap. So the buttons just look a little bit different, as we saw. I really like these things. If you toggle something, it's just kind of nice. And again, you get all of this totally for free. I don't need to worry about doing anything CSS related if I just follow the rules that Flat UI tells me. So let's just look at one last example, this time looking at Flat UI. So this is the last example here. So again, we'll have another take on the course homepage. So notice that Flat UI actually uses Bootstrap, so it kind of, you know, builds on what some other people have done. So let's just look at the finished product first. Sorry, not that one. So this is what the site might look like using this other CSS kit. So notice that, you know, the buttons are a little bit different, and I hover over them and they change color. You know, these colors kind of work well together, they're kind of nice, and the font looks a little bit different. You know, I wrote zero CSS in order to get the page to look like this. All I did was wrote HTML that kind of conformed to someone else's rules. So just to go through this quickly, you know, once again, I have a div representing the whole website. You know, at the top of the page, I'll probably want to make that a div. You know, and here's just the text for Computer Science E1, and the title of the course, and the subtitle. And then here's just a row of buttons. Again, we're using this CSS grid thing. Each of these buttons is aligned in a grid, and each individual button takes up 3 blocks in the grid. So if I have 4 buttons, each one of them takes up 3 blocks. We have a total of 12, so it kind of spans the whole width of the page. So again, I'm just kind of showing the different color buttons I can use. Simply by adding this different class, I can change the color of the button. Again, I didn't have to write any CSS myself. And so finally, you know, I did write a small bit of CSS for each of these blocks of content. So if I open up styles.css, all I did was I added a little bit of margin and padding to those kind of content blocks. And I also added this thing here, the border radius. And all that does, the border radius property, all that does is rather than making this a square, kind of rounds out the borders a little bit. So you notice that that's something that Flat UI, this library, did for me with the buttons. And so I just kind of wanted to do the same thing with these content blocks here. And then that's really it. All of these colors that they look kind of like random values, well, not even. I just kind of took the colors that Flat told me to take, and I know that they're going to work together because someone who knows more about colors than I do said that they're going to work nicely together. All right, so that's it for our quick whirlwind tour of HTML and CSS. Definitely check out Ben and RJ's section videos for more examples of HTML and CSS to kind of walk you through how to do different things on a web page. But we'll post lots of different examples to help you kind of work through how to do something in HTML and CSS. And so next week, we'll have our last lecture of the course to focus on programming, and that'll be how to make things happen on these static web pages. So we'll see you next week.